Good morning, everybody. I would like to call to order the July 1st, 2020 meeting of the TPA's Technical Advisory Committee. Pursuant of the Governor's Executive Order Number 20-69, the TPA Operating Procedure Section 6.2, and the TPA Emergency Order Number 2020-03, the Palm Beach TPA is conducting this meeting virtually using the Zoom webinar platform. The TPA selected this platform because it does not require the public purchase or download of any additional software or equipment to attend this meeting. Aside from the Zoom webinar platform that the participants will be used to attend remotely, the public will also have no dissembled difference in their ability to watch the meeting from that, and if someone's physically attending the meeting. Instructions to join the virtual meeting as well as contact information for the TPA staff member to assist you are provided in the published meeting agenda. Please note that although some members of the TAC are attending the meeting in person, committee members will be appearing at today's meeting remotely or either via webcam or telephone. Additionally, scheduled presenters and the TAC liaison will also be appearing via webcam or telephone. Before we begin, I will summarize the public comment procedures for this meeting. Written documents, comments, and questions can be submitted online at the website provided in the agenda. Verbal comments can also be made live through Zoom webinar platform. When you wish to be recognized, please use the raise hand function within the Zoom platform and then wait to be recognized by the chair and unmuted by the meeting host. Lastly, an in-person visitor may submit comments card available at the welcome table. So at this time, please call the roll and so we can establish a quorum.
Okay, just want to confirm, can everybody hear me?
Right. Yes.
I have Will Hicks. Will, are you there? I'll come back to him. Lotus and Alter. Mo, can you hear me? I see he's connected, but it doesn't seem that he's at his chair. Anna Bulowski?
Here.
Terrence Bailey? Jim Bell? And if you did mute yourself after you joined the meeting, you would need to unmute yourself. I can, I've tried unmuting all, but it should prompt you on your unmute as well. Jim, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, thank you. Jamie Brown? Lorraine Fargo? And I believe we have Vicki Gutanis here on behalf of Lorraine. Vicki, can you please notice?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And Natalie Crowley?
Present.
Wen Deng?
Here.
Brian Davis? I believe I saw Brian earlier, but I'm not showing him on the screen, Brian. Oh, thank you.
Margie, sorry, I am here. I don't know if I heard you call my name.
Yes, thank you, Mo. Kim Delaney?
Here.
Thomas Driscoll?
CJ on behalf.
Alex Hansen?
Here.
Hey, Margie, Jamie Brown's here also. For some reason, my program reset.
Okay, thank you, Jamie. I'm sorry. Alex Hansen, Aaron Hoffman?
Here.
Kara Erwin Ferris is excused. Andrew Mack is excused. Maynard Mansour?
Here.
Christopher Marsh? Michael O'Dell?
Here.
Richard Pereira?
Here.
Richard Reed? I just want to make sure I'm not missing him in the attendees list. Okay, Maria Sahara?
Here.
Penny Wilson is excused. John Crane?
Here.
We have a quorum, Madam Chair.
Great. Are there any changes to the agenda this morning? Margie?
Yes, I'm sorry. We do have a change. We did send a notification out to the committee members and to post it on our website. We are requesting for an additional information item 3B, and I think Avenue from Florida's Turnpike to Job Road, PD&E study.
Okay. Can we have a motion to adopt the agenda as amended?
I make a motion to adopt the agenda as amended.
Okay, motion by Alex.
Second.
Second by Maria. So all those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those
aye.
All those opposed, nay. Okay, motion carries. Moving on to item 1C, are there any changes to the meeting minutes?
This is Alex. I had discussed with TPA staff a modification that was needed to a section of member comments. I believe that change has been made and will be reflected in the new minutes for the meeting. This had to do with Moral Turk's presentation, in which in the minutes it indicates that the installation of the temporary roundabout was going to take place. I believe what Mo said is that it had already taken place on May 30th. So I believe PPA staff has already changed that, but it's not reflected yet in the minutes that all of us are seeing. So I make a motion with that modification.
Okay. We have a motion to adopt the minutes with the modification of the roundabout that has already been tested, right? Can I have a second, please?
I'll second.
Okay, Anna, second. Are there any discussion on this item? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. Okay, seeing none, motion carries. Are there any, I guess at this time, item 1D is comment from the chair. I don't have any comments at this time, so we can move on to 1E. I'd like to invite Andrew to review the liaison's report.
Morning, everyone. Just a reminder, we'd like to encourage our members of TAC to use their videos when you're on the call. And then for those who are presenters, you can have your video off and tell us your time to present. Thank you. So on the liaison report, which is on the screen now, just a few updates. We put out a general planning consultant services request for proposals. So this is for hiring two general planning consultants for a contract date from October 1st, the start of the federal fiscal year, all the way to June 30th, 2023. And those are going to be up on our website, and submittals are due to the CPA by July 20th, 2020 at 4 p.m. So if you can assist us in sharing this information with any interested parties, we appreciate it. There is a USDOT summit on pedestrian safety, and they're hosting a virtual summit to discuss pedestrian safety issues and actions through a series of webinars that run July 8th, 15th, and 28th, and you can register at pedestriansafetysummit.com. Palm Beach County has a BWell PVC mini grants available, which supports up to $5,000 for residents and organizations to advance community health initiatives. So there's a Q&A on July 7th, and then you can find out more information at BWell PVC work and BWell blank grants.
Okay, great.
Oh, I got a few. I'm sorry. Second slide. So we are also tracking local transportation projects. We had this in the liaison report last time. We still haven't received any capital improvement programs from our city, so we urge you to send us your list of local projects that we can incorporate into our database, because we'd love to show those on our mapping applications, and that's useful for everyone to be able to collaborate together on those projects. Know what's coming up. So we really appreciate if you all can send us whichever format it's in, if it's in Excel or it's just a PDF document of your CFD, that we would really appreciate it. And you can send those to Jason Price, our CFD coordinator, at jprice@longbeachcpa.org. And then our upcoming board meeting in July, the board is July 16th at 9 a.m. And then we do not have any meetings in August. And so after that, our next meetings will be held in September, and that's the faculty meeting on September 2nd. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Andrew, I have we're in the middle, the city is in the middle of updating our CIP website. And so I can, once that's ready, I can share with you the GIS database. Okay. So are there any public comments on this item?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. Does any committee members have questions or comments on the liaison report? Okay, seeing none, we're going to move to item 1E, or 1F, excuse me. Are there any general comments received at this time?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. Item 2A, it's an action item, and I'd like to invite Andrew to present on this item.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So today, our action item, our first action item is going to be the fiscal year 2022 to 2026 list of priority projects. And what this is, our priority list that is sent to FDOT to put into the upcoming work program for fiscal year 2022 and 2026. And then that gets created into our transportation improvement program. So this is really setting what our products are going to be for those next five fiscal years. I'm just going to rehash our mission statement, to collaboratively plan, prioritize, and fund the transportation system. So we're in that prioritization process now. We had the planning of our long-range transportation plan. We have our local initiatives and transportation alternatives grants that get incorporated into this priority list. So this is really the prioritization time. And then when we program the transportation improvement program, we're going into that, the funding of the transportation system. You see this timeline often. This is the updated version for fiscal year 22 to 2026. And really, it's a long process until we get to an adoption of a transportation improvement program. And this is that first step in that process. So today, we are looking at the draft of the list of priority projects. It's up for approval. And then after that, FDOT creates that draft tentative work program. And you all see that, and the board sees it later on in summer of in fall of 2020. And we have a draft for you in December of 2020 that we can approve. And then the TIP is created later on the following year in May of 2021 as a draft. And then you'll see the final version again in June. So this past month, the TPA board adopted the fiscal year 21 to 2026. So we're already working on this next cycle of 2022 to 2026. And then, of course, we'll be operating under the newer TIP starting July 1st of next year. So what I'm going to go through is just a summary of our list of priority projects for our state road modifications, our local initiatives program, and our transportation alternatives. So they'll be categorized into these three projects. The first one, state road modifications, those come out of our LRTP, our long-range transportation plan, from our cost feasible list, and also through our state road modifications, smaller modifications that are identified by staff, stakeholders, and then also we look at resurfacing projects and bridge and rehab projects going on in the county and seeing how we can supplement those with other types of improvements for safety, complete streets, TSMNO, so other types of improvements that we can tack on to already maintenance jobs out there in the coming years. The funding from state road modifications, these are meant to be spent on state roadways, comes from state gas taxes. Those are primarily all state funding. It's about $20.5 million a year. And you can see the sources on the screen. District dedicated revenue is the main funding source of that. And then we also have DS and DPTO. For local initiatives, this is that annual competitive application process for multimodal projects. And these are capped at $5 million a project. We have cities apply to us, and we rank those projects, and you'll see those today. It's roughly $22.8 million a year, and this primarily comes from federal funds. And so you'll see those shown as server transmission funds of SU, and then the FDOTS version of that from the federal source, which is considered SA. And then lastly, we have our transportation alternatives, which are a smaller amount of funding available for non-motorized projects. It goes through this similar application process as local initiatives. We have up to $3.1 million a year to prioritize towards that, and they come from federal funds. And that's also from surface transportation funds from the federal government. And you'll see that as TALU and then TLT for the state side. So I'm going to go briefly through some of the summary of the changes and highlights for those three programs. So for state road modifications, as I mentioned, it's $20.5 million a year. The first update that we have for you is with US 1 from Albemarle Road to Okeechobee Boulevard. So this is a project that was going to be in West Palm Beach. It was going to be a lane repurposing from four lanes to three lanes. FDOT did not approve of the reduction in the amount of lanes to three lanes, and they were going to recommend some changes on it to maintain the four lanes and incorporate other types of improvements. At this time, West Palm Beach is still wanting to go to a three lane. So until they figure those things out about how to move forward on this stretch of roadway, we're recommending deleting from priority project list. And then once everything is figured out, it can be put back into the process later on into the priority list in a future year. The next updates we have are for US 1 enhanced transit and multimodal facilities. So in the packet, you'll see this as multiple line items under enhanced transit and multimodal facilities. So a lot of these originated from our US 1 multimodal corridor study. These have all been in the priority list before, but we're requesting that FDOT continue to program these phases of these projects. So we have construction of funding for transit shelters. We are requesting for construction funding for land repurposing project in Boca Raton. For design and construction of funding for land purchasing in West Palm Beach and North Palm Beach, and then for them to conduct the feasibility study for land repurposing in Lake Worth Beach. And then once the feasibility study is done, then we can move forward into planning the other phases. Additional requests for ones that have already existing on our priority list for Atlantic Avenue widening from Lyons Road to Jock Road to accelerate the right-of-way and construction phases of those projects, of that project. For Okeechobee Boulevard from State Road 7 to US 1, which is another multimodal corridor, to program the transit shelter funding. And then State Road 80 from State Road 15 to County Road 880 street lining. So there's a feasibility study, or there's a warrant study underway right now. FDOT is completing that soon, and they'll be coming back to our committees to present on that, I believe, in September. And so, depending on the result of that, we are requesting the programming of design and construction of lighting along that corridor. The next one is Lake Worth Road Enhanced Transit and Multimodal Corridor facilities. We're requesting the program of transit signal prioritization on that corridor, and then to program construction and implementation of eight new projects. And I'm going to go through those briefly on the next slide. So the eight new projects that you all have not seen before, this would be at the bottom part of the list of priority projects for state road modifications. And these are they come about from our cost schedule plan. They also come about from requests from locals for projects on state roadways. And again, we also look at resurfacing jobs and bridge modifications and rehabs and see how we can incorporate other types of improvements. The first one is in Boca Raton, Federal Highway Expansion for Boulevard, and this is to change a through lane into a through and right turn lane so they can add in a bike lane to create space there, and also a mass arm conversion at that signal. We also have three projects covering 36 intersections in Boca Raton and Palm Beach County, who are our signal operators, to replace span wire with mass arms and steel string poles. And we have three projects for State Road 715 where there's missing gaps in sidewalks. So connecting those with some sidewalk improvements also includes some lighting and buffered bicycle lanes where applicable. And the last one is a resurfacing job by FDOT in downtown Lake Worth Beach. And so this is along Lake Ave, Lucerne Ave. And our vision is to add stamped concrete crosswalks, replace sidewalk pavers, and improve drainage within that resurfacing project. For local initiatives, this is an annual competitive application process, roughly $22.8 million a year. Some highlights, all the existing projects we have in the plan are already moving forward, so we have no updates for the existing projects for anything that's moving paces too much. Two exceptions to that, we do have the FEC railroad safety infrastructure and requesting to put $565,000 in fiscal year 2021 to support a CRISI grant that they applied for. So they applied for a CRISI grant and they needed additional funding to serve as a match for that. And so this would provide a match for that CRISI grant. There's also a project that was submitted, I believe, last year for the town of Palm Beach, which was to take four signals in the town of Palm Beach and incorporate them into the Palm Beach County traffic signal system. And that project was requested to be accelerated, and Palm Beach County is able to do a project quicker. So we're trying to accelerate that project with funding availability in fiscal year 2022. And then we had five new applications for projects in this last grant cycle. Four are prioritized, and then we had one that's ineligible here. And I'll be presenting those in the next slide. So for the 2020 applications, you can see them in the order that we have for the score based on our scoring mechanism, on our goals, objectives, and measures. And of the five, I'll read through them all. So the first one was Palm Tran electric buses to replace electric buses, install electric charging stations at their maintenance facility. This is a similar one that they probably applied to for last year. SFRTA also applied to purchase one passenger rail car. This would serve as a portion of that. They're also getting a match from a regional funding source, and they've also requested this at the same time through Broward MPO, going through their version of the local initiatives process. So they've also requested money from them. The third one is Lake Worth Beach, and this is downtown to on Southeast Coast Street and South H Street, and this is to reconstruct the roadways to provide one-way pairs and designated bike lanes. And then the next one is Wellington, has Greenbrier Boulevard designated bike lanes from Aero Club Drive to Greenview Shores Boulevard. And on that one, I wanted to mention that it is score in our scoring rubric 22.6 points. In our program overview, we had we put in a few years ago a threshold of 25 points to be considered eligible. So that's why we wanted to flag it for you on this chart. We're still recommending to inclusion of this. As I mentioned, we have around $22 million available. And so there is still funding available, and it is a smaller project. We still are recommending to include it into the priority list because there is available funding. And then the last one is West Palm Beach, which is Mercer Avenue from Australian Ave to Center Park Boulevard. And this was a complete streets project to put in bike lanes. The issue with this one was that it does abut some single-family residential properties, and so because of that, we're requiring additional public outreach to those homeowners to get approval of those. So once they get that, they can apply next year and try to move forward with that project. One second. Okay, transportation alternatives. So this is the other competitive grant application process we have, $3 million a year for non-motorized projects. All existing projects are moving forward, and then we have six new applications. Four are prioritized, and then we have two with insufficient funding available. And I'll go through those quickly. So this is the 2020 products that we received, all six of them, and these are scored by us, and then we go to the Bicycle Trails and pedestrian advisory committee for them to rank him. And so their ranking, you can see in order there, and that's the ranking we put into the list of priority projects. So it's based off the BCPAC ranking. But it did line up pretty well with the TPA scoring already. That first one is for Lake Worth Beach, and this is to provide ADA improvements in sidewalks, curb ramps, in various locations throughout the city. Next one is Kyoto Gardens Drive from Military to A1A in Palm Beach Gardens, and this is to install bicycle lanes and a pathway on the north side of the roadway. And we have the Westgate CRA, which has pedestrian safety improvements on Cherry Road from Military Trail to Quail Drive. And then the next one that is eligible funding, based on the amount of funding available, is Palm Tran for ADA bus stop enhancements. So this is to provide ADA enhancements at a lot of their transit stops. And that is various locations countywide. So that is really all the way up to about that $3 million mark. So there's not really much more money anticipated to be available through the Transportation Alternatives Program. So these next two are ones that they were eligible, but we don't have any funding available through the TA program. So this is the C2 Canal, Shared Use Pathway, and the Village of Wellington, and then also ADA improvements in various locations and neighborhoods in the Village of Royal Palm Beach. So in the previous years of doing this, when something like this happens and there's available money in the local initiatives, there has been recommendation in the past to see if we can try to fund these ones that are insufficient funding in this program with other funding sources and other programs such as local initiatives. And we could, as staff, look into that if you all choose to want to go that direction. Obviously, the timing of those might be different, right? Because transportation alternatives, the funding is available usually about 3 years out, whereas in local initiatives, the funding is available around 5 years out. So this would delay the projects, but they would be funded. So just something to consider moving forward. And that's the end of my presentation.
Well, I have a few questions, if you are opening it up for questions.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I believe that I am to open up for public comments on this item at this time, and then we move to committee member comments.
Madam Chair, there are no public comments on this item, and okay. I would need a motion for adoption to open it up for discussion.
Right. So before we can open it for discussion, we need a motion. So is there a motion to recommend adoption of the fiscal year 22 to 26 list of priority projects?
So moved.
Okay. Okay, motion by Natalie, second by Maria. Now we can open it up for discussion. Mo?
Okay, thank you. Actually, most of them are questions, not for discussion, but however. Question for you, Andrew. The pathway project that we applied for in the Bill Glaze area on state highway system, what's the status of that one? I did not see it in amongst the projects that you have listed.
No, are you referring to the state road 715 projects?
Yes, yeah, the few several ones in the Bill Glaze area.
Yes, I believe for the most part the state road 715 projects can move forward, and those would be administered by FDOT. And if you're looking at your packet, that's projects 20-5 and 20-6, and then also 20-7. And I believe one of those was one of the ones that your staff recommended to us. There might have been one other state road 715 project that was not able to be programmed yet because it needed a feasibility study. But those are the three that we were able to program, and they are going to be administered by FDOT.
Okay. Another question is that signal rebuilds. I think we also applied for quite a few signal rebuilds on the state highway system. I see that you have added an item for the upgrades from Spanwire to Mass Arms for some signals in Palm Beach County and others in Boca Raton, but I think we also had another list for the rebuilds.
Yes, and what Mo is referring to is both Boca Raton and Palmage County requested that we look into rebuilds. So there's the replacement span wires with mast arms and steel train poles and some other rebuilds on state roadways on those signals. And all those, Mo, are programmed or are on the list of priority projects to be programmed, and they're 20-2, 20-3, and 20-4. How they appear in the work program later on, they might get bundled differently than what you see on this list, but this is what we're going forward with. AFTAP might try to bundle the ones that are just on state roadways and then the ones that are off the system, but the ones that you are referring to are on this list.
Okay, the 36 signals that you mentioned in that item, they are included in those?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. One more question. So, what happens now? I see that we are recommending the deletion of the US-1 project south of Okeechobee, the lien reduction. So what would happen to those funds that are freed up? What's the plan for that? How are we recommending to use that money?
Sure, those really get spread out and try to put into different priorities that we have. The money typically does try to get used up on the other priorities that have holes in that.
But it's not addressed in this program, in this proposal that we are voting on, right? It's not being allocated.
No, it's not. It's, I don't believe it's going to be reallocated to other locations. One second, we may ask Nate.
I think is this for the Christie ones going for FEC? No, so we don't know where it's going yet.
We don't even know what happened.
Sorry?
We don't even know if the money will be available. We're still operating under pre-COVID forecast. But if it's available, we'll use it on our TPA priority list and other state factors.
So you want to go to Steam, but we have our director in the room with us here. Yes, right now we may not even have the money available, you know, pre-COVID. But we're going to post-COVID.
I can do this.
Reprogram that on our other priorities in that same list. Yes. So it would be going towards our other state road modifications.
Okay. And one last question. Sorry, I have so many of them. One last question. So, if we were to propose, improvements, projects for, on the state highway system, capacity improvements, that are based on the what we got from the model run from the LRTP 2045 exercise. So what would be that we could add those at one point, and how does this happen? To add them to the priority list so that they could eventually get funded, hopefully.
Sure. Yes, those are also projects that are eligible on the state highway system. So you could submit those to us, and we can look at prioritizing those on this list. So we can, look at those from our goals, objectives, and measures standpoint. And then if they meet those, then we can put it onto our priority list in future years.
I need to add in a couple of things. I'm sorry. Good morning, everyone. First, I want to go back to the earlier question about what happens to the Dixie Highway funding. The answer that Andrew was trying to say is our revenue forecast right now that was used to develop the five-year TIP is based on pre-COVID-19 impacts on driving behaviors. We don't even know for certain that we will have the money in the five-year TIP that has been forecasted. So to the extent that funding for the Dixie Highway project is available, we will potentially be able to reassign it to other TPA priority projects on state highways. But it may not be available at all. It might have been an aspirational number that doesn't materialize because we've been driving so much less in the previous few months. The question regarding capacity projects, the answer to that question is the opportunity to include a capacity project on a state highway was in the development of our long-range transportation plan. A major widening of a state highway that is not identified as a line item in our long-range transportation plan cannot be added to our annual priority list without first going through the process of amending our long-range transportation plan to create that line item. It is not possible through a minor modification program like the state road modifications where we're saying, let's build a sidewalk here or let's make a bike lane there or let's add street lighting here. It is not possible on an annual basis to sneak in a widening of a major section of a state highway that needs to go back and become a line item in our long-range transportation plan.
So a follow-up question, Nick. So if I know that the state always comes to us and we ask for amendments of the LRTP to add funding and or maybe add projects. So that will be the same process that will be followed, and maybe when they are coming for some other project, that's a good idea, good time to lump in, you know, additional projects that have not been already on the LRTP.
If you want to know how the long-range plan, what is the process for amending the long-range transportation plan, the best example I can give you is the presentation that was made at the February committee meetings and then presented to the February TPA governing board meeting, where we amended the adopted long-range transportation plan to add the two State Road 7 projects into that document. As the city of West Palm Beach has demonstrated with their lawsuit against the TPA, there is a process and minimum criteria that must be satisfied in order to amend a project into the long-range transportation plan. While we believe that we have fully satisfied the requirements of that process, one of our members disagrees with that assumption, and we are evaluating right now through the conflict resolution process and subsequently potentially through the legal court system, the minimum assumptions or minimum requirements associated with an amendment to the long-range transportation plan. So we will have more information to share with you as to exactly what information must be compiled to process a long-range transportation plan amendment when that court case or conflict resolution process is resolved.
Thank you. I have no more questions. Thanks.
Madam Chair, I hope that Michael Lodell, Christopher Marsh, and Natalie Crowley have their answers.
Okay, great. We'll proceed in that order. Michael?
Just a note, the staff indicated that if there was funding for the alternative applications available for our project, we would obviously be amending to moving that out a ways. That's not a problem for us at this point. Thank you.
Great. Is it Chris Marsh after Michael?
Yes.
Chris?
Hi, how's it going? Sorry I missed roll call, but I'm here. Same comment as Mike. Rural Palm Beach would be willing to wait 2 years if we can move the funding to local initiatives.
And lastly?
Natalie
Crowley. Yeah. Please.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, actually, one of my questions, so thanks guys for answering that, was just to hear from Wellington and Royal Palm to see what their will would be. You know, I personally would be willing to support trying to find alternative funding for the alternative improvement for under the local initiatives program, so that I was just more curious to see what their take was and what their will was. Understanding that it's a longer wait period for the funding. You know, I didn't know if they wanted to apply again next year and then they have that 3-year wait period, since that project has already been vetted. But if they are willing to, seek alternative funding under other programs, I personally am willing to support that. I think it's great that they have projects that are eligible. And then my other question was for Mo. He was talking about, road improvements in the 2045. And, you know, it seems, I guess, the thought process is if funds are becoming eligible because of the removal of the US 1 project, then potentially there could be other funds, or potentially those funds could be utilized to reprogram those toward others that could be used either from the existing 2045 plan or future amendments in the 2045 plan. And I was just curious to see if he was speaking in ambiguities or if he had specific roads that he had in mind.
All right. Yes, I had specific projects in mind that were based on the model run outputs that were produced in the process of the development of the LRTP.
Do you know what those are? I was just curious.
Actually, I brought them up during the deliberation when we were discussing the LRTP at a couple of our TAC meetings, and I don't have them handy, but I can share a copy of those. Actually, I sent an email about that as well to the TPA staff back then. So I can dig up that email if you are interested, and I can share it with you.
And I think to reiterate what Nick's point earlier is that we have to go through the LRTP amendment process. Okay, Natalie?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was unclear to me if Mo was referring to existing projects in the 2045, and certainly it's a given that if there are new roads that have not been included and are not included in the 2045, then the whole process for amending the 2045 would be necessary. I just didn't know if Mo was referring to existing roads within the existing 2045, which many of them are unfunded.
Understood. Thank you.
Are there any other?
Yeah, I would be curious to see. It's not a huge priority, but Mo, you could even just email me on a sidebar if there's ones that you're thinking of. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Are there any other comments at this time?
John Crane and Alice Kingston have their hands raised.
Okay, great. John and then Alex.
So my comment is related to the Lake Lucerne project priority. It's a resurfacing project, and I just wanted to clarify that while the request is to add stance concrete and other decorative features, those would not be eligible with the resurfacing funding. So it would have to be funding from either the locals and or through the MPO priority process or TPA priority process that would cover those.
Okay. Alex?
I have a question and then a comment. Sorry, so the question is on the Table 1 State Road Modification, the third item there, the Tri-Rail West Palm Beach to Jupiter extension, the extension of the commuter rail service into the northern part of Palm Beach County. This is a project that has been kind of on standby for a few years now, and there has been this impasse and kind of a finger pointing as to what needs to happen next and who will do it. I see here that we have allocated funds for the PD&E on fiscal year 22. Fiscal year 22 starts actually July of 2021, so a year from now. I just wanted to see if somebody could confirm that the expectation is that the PD&E is going to, for this project, is going to actually happen next fiscal year, which again starts a year from now, because we have been kind of on standby on this for a while, and I think it's a needed project. So that is the question. And then I have a comment. Again, the top two projects listed on the state road modification are both the extension of State Road 7 north of 60th, and then the widening of State Road 7 from Okeechobee to 60th. The City of West Palm Beach has repeatedly opposed this project, and so I cannot support this TIP amendment because of the inclusion of these projects. on this list. But I do not know if SDOT or anybody or TPA staff can answer the question on the other one, on the tri-rail extension, PD&E.
This is Andrew. I can give you an answer there, Alex. So for the tri-rail extension from West Palm Beach to Jupiter, so the reason it continues to be deferred, as many of you know, is due to a lack of an FEC easement, and also because there's not a local funding source for operations and maintenance that's been identified. And so FDOT's position on this is to continue to defer the product development environmental phase until those are established. And we fully expect the staff that that's going to continue to be deferred, but we're going to continue to push to have that prioritized and push on FDOT to move forward the PD&E study so that that PD&E study could quantify the construction and operation costs and evaluate the real capacity to support the FEC easement. So we sort of need that PD&E study done so we can get more concrete numbers so we can try to move forward with other ways of funding O&M. So that's going to be our position on it.
And I agree with the TPA's position. My concern is that we're in this catch-22 in which, again, FDOT says, well, the funding needs to happen, and then we are saying, well, we need to do the PD&E to determine how much funding and some of the details associated with how to proceed ahead with the project. So this impasse, I'm afraid, is going to continue, and we have been on this for a number of years now. And so I'm concerned that, again, we're going to continue with this finger-pointing and inaction on this much-needed project.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other member comments at this time?
Yes. For some reason, I could not find the raise hand button here, so I just speak up.
Okay. CJ.
Yeah, there are a couple of land repurpose projects proposed on the U.S. one, in particular from 6 land reduced to 4 lands. And I just wonder, is that... are those projects being proposed primarily based on the LRTP, the model run, looking at the numbers, or is there a proper study has been done to identify whether or not after the land reduction, the street operations, the signal operation will not cause any potential issues? The project has been done in my neighborhood. I'm referring to the US 1 north of LTA 1A in the Taquasta area to the county line. After the conversions, we found two potential problems. One is the queuing is longer and potentially we exist the storage space from left turn and blocking the through traffic. And then the second issue is for the safety. We find that widened bike lane and also the buffer space was continuously occupied by the people who try to make the right turn. And the driver can suddenly just jump into that space and intended to make a right turn, disregard if the pedestrian or bikers, biker list was riding behind. So that created the potential safety issue. I don't know if a study has been done to address, to identify this potential issue.
CJ, let me ask, is that a buffered bike lane or is it protected bike lane?
It's buffered.
It's buffered, okay.
Yes, and there's no protection, no physical protection.
No, there's no physical protection, so I can see that the right turn, it's being utilized for something like that. We've taken a position in the city of West Palm to only provide protected bike facilities on arterial roads or even collector roads such as, within our downtown area. And I think it yields better safety you know, benefits if you have a physical barrier to protect. And of course, it eliminates the need for a vehicle to be in that lane to make a right-hand turn.
Yes, so if that's the case, that I would urge the project would include the protected bike lane instead of just buffer, right, into the project.
Thank you.
I'd like to respond to CJ's other question. All these projects on US 1 or any other projects, say roadways, that would be repurposing lanes, they are required to go through a traffic study. So once the traffic study is complete, you know, FDOT has a determination on whether they can support a lane reduction or not. It's also a city needs to have approval and not do a resolution. And then that's when you would move forward with actually having the project program for design and construction.
Thank you.
And I have one more thing I wanted to mention earlier about these TA projects that where there was not adequate funding available through the TA program. So, you know, if you do all recommend us moving to local initiatives, I just wanted to bring up a point that we'll try our best to get those programs. Obviously, there's a little bit of a difference in the eligibility of items between the two programs, but there's a few exceptions in there, so we'll do our best to try to get those programs, and we'll have an update for you on how those move forward or not.
I have a question. Okay, going back to CJ, we are doing a lane elimination study in Boca Federal Highway, and yes, we're doing a traffic study. Actually, we're almost done. And within 2-3 months, I think, we're going to get it to DOT maybe within a month or so. Then I understand it goes to Tallahassee. But we're working on that project, and yes, we definitely have a traffic study. And my question, Andrew, I see the two projects from Boca. One is the traffic signals, and the other one, the Federal Highway, the Spanish River Boulevard. And you show in there that you show the lead agency as FDOT. Does it mean that FDOT will be administering these projects? Because at this time, we've been asking since February. I mean, we've been asking, and we have not had a final answer.
Thank you, Maria. Yes, I apologize. We just found out about that last week with FDOT, and they have confirmed that for those projects that we're showing as FDOT, they are willing to administer those projects.
So thank you so much.
The ones are going to be administered by FDOT.
Thank you.
Okay. Does anybody have any other comments at this time? Okay, seeing none, I do have some comments. And a reference to one is what Maria spoke about, the FDOT-administered projects. We also have, as we initiated several of these projects, requested that the city could have the opportunity to administer a project. Just because we know our community differently, we know that there is a different level of communications that's needed for our projects. Instead of the standard, 30, 60, 90 type of presentation that we often see presented by FDOT. So far it's, the answer has been no, and especially on state route. The other thing that, a few years ago when we were awarded with a, complete streets project, and there's two pedestrian bridge that DOT has offered to administer the project for us, which I'm very happy that, from a workload standpoint and the complexity of the project, that really helps us, from our staff time. The only thing that I think that was a little bit disappointing is that the consultant negotiation or selection itself, the city does not have an opportunity to be considered on a technical review committee or maybe some kind of, advisory committee to DOT as they're selecting. Ultimately, these proposals are written for DOT and not so much as what we see as a proposal for the city. I guess my disappointment is that there is a danger in the consultants, the type of projects that we're going to receive as a final product. Obviously, we are, you know, we try to be very bike friendly, and we look for, you know, companies with experience working in urban environment, not so much as, you know, like rural state roads. So I think that was one of the, I guess, disappointment that I have going through the process, but I am very happy that DOT is, you know, the project manager is very cordial. He's been helping us, and we communicate on a different level. It's just like these type of projects, we have to allocate additional funding to do additional public outreach on our end. These type of projects, I think there is a danger, especially with these lane repurposing project along US-1, more specifically, mm-hmm. as we saw what happened with West Palm Beach, the South Dixie project. You know, my concern is that once we want to realize the vision of having a bike-friendly corridor, a multimodal corridor along all of US-1, but ultimately DOT has the opportunity to go in at the very end before going to construction and delete and remove this project. And so obviously we can't support a project that is considered to be a triple R project in our mind, even if there are additional safety improvements. There is another section of US-1 in the city that DOT is going through to do a resurfacing project. You know, we have ultimately the multimodal aspect of it is a sharrow on the ground, and I don't think that's sufficient. I think it's at the very least, there should be some lane narrowing so that we can have a multi-use path on one side, something like that to be considered. But again, over and over, I've been told that it's not our scope. Our scope is to resurface and to stripe. But I do think that if we could have these really important conversation as we're moving forward, because yes, it might not happen today. We might not have $200,000 to invest in a traffic study and a lane elimination application, but at the very least, you know, these elements should be considered when DOT, you know, is going through these triple R projects. The other comment that I like to make is I really appreciate the priority with Quiet Zone. As we know, going through the Quiet Zone within the city of West Palm Beach, we're approaching our phase two as FEC and Brightline is moving north. I do think that maybe in the future year, we can look at the entire district-wide as looking at, for additional lighting funding along these railroad crossing, and ultimately looking at fencing, because I do believe that there are a lot of jaywalking activities, you know, unintentional, obviously, along this corridor that we could enhance safety. And then lastly, you know, with the LI grants application, I think the city was not considered this year, which I completely respect the decision, and I'm very happy to see that other city has their project prioritized. But ultimately, even with the amount of efforts that we made in obtaining a resolution, scheduling a Zoom meeting, and we were asked to have signatures along the corridor from a percentage of the stakeholder, which is very feasible, but it's not feasible during COVID. So I think maybe next fiscal year, when we go through the LI process, maybe some of these items can be a little more transparent early on, and that would help, because we didn't get this feedback until much later in the application. You know, again, it's all right. We'll try again next year, and we'll still continue to work with the neighborhood this year on our end. And then I think that's all the comments I have on the presentation of the report. Are there any other discussion at this time? Okay, seeing none, I believe we have a motion and a second. If we could,
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I do have that well, I don't know if it was by accident now or not, but Travel Crane did have his hand raised.
I'm sorry, again, I didn't hear you well.
Travel Crane has his hand raised.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
No, Chairman, I just wanted to say, we hear what you're saying about coordination on resurfacing projects, and not just from you, but from, other municipalities. I think, as an agency, we do try to generally reach out to the locals as we develop our scope of services and, for these projects. We're trying to do that earlier, as we identify projects coming up. Maybe we can do a better job. So I will definitely carry that message back. Just to let you know that we do hopefully provide an opportunity for the locals to participate in not only some of the scope development aspects, but when we do our ranking of consultants and that kind of stuff, I think we do have an opportunity for a municipality to participate as a, non-voting member. They could sit in, listen to the presentations, review the letters, and at least give us their feedback. So I think that opportunity does exist. And we can certainly work towards involving our municipal partners on 3R projects in that capacity as we move forward. If when the PM reaches out to you all, if you express your desire to participate in that process as a non-voting member, that will help also. And if you're not getting the answer or feedback or the opportunity, let us know. Thank you.
I think that's, thank you for that. And I really appreciate, hearing that from FDOT. We definitely are very interested to participate every step of the way. The other thing that I want to make a comment is, from the lane elimination, project itself is, going through this process for several years now, I want to be very transparent with other cities that's pursuing lane eliminations. It's very costly because we know that it's not just the traffic study or the lane elimination application for one. It's two, it's like during design services, during the design phase, even though DOT is doing the design, any landscaping, and again, landscaping or streetscape is a responsibility of the city. We have allocated an additional $150,000 on just landscape design as we're going through the South Dixie project. In addition to that, we knew that DOT would not be paying for any of those hardscape and streetscape, so we allocated another $1.5 million worth of construction and then another $50,000 on just PR. On that. So I just want to be very transparent. As we have in the city, we have experience. It is not, there is a pretty high match, to these type of projects. And, when you make a certain level of investment, you want to see the project follow through. This concludes my comments at this time. And if there are any other member comments, please raise your hand. Fans function. Okay, seeing none. We do have a motion. Marjorie, if you can please remind me in a second by a motion by Natalie and a second by
Maria.
Okay, Maria. Thank you. We're going to be doing a roll call. Can we at this time?
And just to reiterate, the motion on the floor is to recommend adoption of the fiscal year 22 to 26 list of priority projects as presented. So Will Hicks, no, I'm sorry, I'm going to unmute all. It may prompt you on your end to unmute as well. Will Hicks? And if you're calling it on your phone, Will, you may need to unmute on your end. Come back to him. Modison Alter?
Yes.
Anna Bielowski?
Yes.
Harris Bailey? I believe he's still absent. Jim Bell?
Thank you, Mr. Jamie. Like I said, I'm on my
iPhone. It's Harris Bailey. I'm sorry. I haven't gotten to you yet, Jamie. Jim Bell? Thank you. Jamie?
Yes.
Thank you. Vicki Gutierrez?
Yes.
Natalie Crowley?
Yes. I believe I made the motion, but yes.
Wen Feng?
No.
Brian Davis?
Yes.
Kim Delaney?
Yes.
CJ Lin?
Yes.
Alex Hansen?
No.
Aaron Hoffman?
Yes.
Meher Mansour?
Yes.
Christopher Marsh?
Yes.
Michael O'Dell?
Yes.
Richard Pereira?
Yes.
Kim Glass Castro? Kim, I have you muted. You'll need to unmute.
Yes.
Thank you. Maria Zahara?
Yes.
And again, Will Hicks? So I don't have that verbally. I'm going to mark that as an absent vote. So there are, it passes with two opposed.
Thank you. So moving on item 2B, right now I'd like to invite Valerie to present this item.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Valerie Nielsen. I'm the Deputy Director of Multimodal Development at the TPA. And we follow the state fiscal year, which runs July 1st through June 30th. So we just finished fiscal year 20, and today is the start of fiscal year 21. So I'm going to be providing a few highlights of fiscal year 20 and presenting our draft fiscal year 21 strategic plan. The strategic plan is a one-year document that the TPA has been adopting since 2016. It's not a required document, but more of an above and beyond effort to our two-year unified planning work program to focus our attention on specific tasks we want to achieve over the next year focused on our six goals. So, see if. Okay, so 2020 was a big year for us. Here's a picture of our boardroom and our board doing the ribbon cutting of our new office. Some of the highlights for this year were that we became an independent agency. We were previously hosted by the county, so now we're an independent agency, which is really exciting, and we moved to a new office. This is a picture of our office in downtown West Palm Beach. We also adopted our five-year update to our long-range transportation plan, so our 2045 update. We created an online comment map to be able to receive more comments in an interactive way from our residents and partners. And we also hosted a series of events, including a transit peer exchange and a Vision Zero workshop, which we're really excited because after that workshop, we have one new Vision Zero city. Congratulations to the city of Boynton Beach. I'm just going to do a couple highlights, more highlights of 2020. We are putting together an annual report that we hope to present at our board meeting later this month. It's going to look something like this, but just kind of gives a highlight over our six goals. Here on the left, you can see our screenshot of our interactive map and also our February board meeting, which where we had over 2,000 public comments. So I think our biggest board attended board meeting to date. And so we cover our six goals in our annual report, and including projects, some construction highlights, and some of the events that we participated over the year. And so moving on to the actual draft fiscal year 21 strategic plan, our board created a subcommittee in May with seven board members, and they met on June 22nd to review this draft and provided us revisions. So that's what I'm going to present to you today, and we will be bringing it to our board for adoption on July 16th. So I'm going to go over the six goals and what has been recommended to change, and starting with goal one. So the first one, last year we said we wanted to create an interactive comment map. Now we say we want to promote this interactive comment map, and our goal is to receive 500 comments by next June. We also made kind of a tweak to 1C. Before we said conduct outreach events, and just to kind of broaden that, we were saying conduct or support outreach events and campaigns, and the outcomes are still the same. Our goal is to receive 500 respondents from these events and 2,000 participants by next year. For goal two, for plan the system, we, for the first action to commence multimodal studies on our transit plan corridors, we had an ambitious goal of 3 studies by June, but we bumped that down to 2 because we realized it does take a lot of effort, and especially right now during kind of these uncertain times, we think 2 might be a better goal to strive for. Under action B, we basically kind of wordsmithed this. Instead of saying conduct safe routes of school and walking audits, we're saying conduct pedestrian and bicycle safety field reviews. So this is where we go out and we identify potential safety improvements that could be made for pedestrian and bicycle facilities around schools and around other corridors as well. So our goal is 3 locations by next June. And then for this one, and just to point out, we usually try to have 3 to 5 goals or 3 to 5 actions per goal. So for this one, we're adding a new action, 2E, and we're saying we want to create a complete streets opportunities plan. And what this would be is, in the past, we've looked at upcoming resurfacing projects or projects that look like they could have complete streets opportunities to add to them. And we want to create more of a complete plan specifically focused on our LRTP tier 1 network of, so looking at where can we implement pedestrian and bicycle improvements and divide that by state roadways, county roadways, and local roadways to be able to share with our partners and put that into an actual document to share. So that's a new action that we've added, and our goal is to complete that by next June. For goal 3, prioritize funding, we changed the wording a little bit on action D. Before we said create a TPA priority list for safety projects, now we're saying identify safety projects within our TPA priority list, because we realize that actually some of the projects we have are safety projects. So we want to point those out and identify those in our priority list. And the other actions stay the same from our past year. For goal 4, implement projects, this was a direction from the board, the subcommittee, to revise this language. Before, we had review FDOT county and city projects designs to ensure they advance our priorities. They asked us to change that wording to say engage stakeholders in the reviews of FDOT county and city projects to promote the TPA's vision and priorities and consider local preferences. So this is more of when we see projects coming up and reaching out to those stakeholders and involving them more in that process versus before we were just kind of looking at what could be improved. So making more of an effort to do that. And our goal is 20 projects. For goal 5, we have several changes. So number 1, we had research existing mobility plans and fees throughout the state of Florida. We did that, but our subcommittee said, let's strike that and change that as a new goal for now. So we did do some research on that, but instead of having that being an ongoing thing, we're striking that, and we're recommending a new goal, a new action, to collect bicycle and pedestrian activity counts, and our outcome is 12 locations by June. And we're actually working with county engineering on this because they have cameras at intersections with a technology that can be activated. It's called Iteris Vantage Live. And so we're working with them to try out 12 locations, and the TPA is paying for that extra service. So we're actually in the process of that now. Not all intersections have the capability in the county, so we're looking at those that do, and then prioritizing locations that are high crash corridors or locations to really get a better sense of those ped and bike counts. And those would be 24/7, 365 days a year counts. So we'll be providing more information on that soon. For action B, we had previously said, let's facilitate local walk, bike, and age-friendly designations for our communities. but we weren't able to achieve any this year, and it's not really in our control to have to say we want three new municipalities to have these designations in a year. So we want to continue to encourage that and provide assistance, but to have a more realistic goal for ourselves, we added a new goal saying assist local governments with transportation studies and plans and have three local studies and plans by June. And this is where we're a funding partner to our local municipalities, for example, for complete streets, mobility plans, those types of studies. So we want to be a funding partner and assist our local governments with those types of studies and plans. For action D, this is a new action. We want to create a complete streets projects video for Palm Beach County and South Florida, highlighting complete streets projects that have been implemented and success stories, because a lot has happened and we may not be aware of everything going on. For example, City of West Palm Beach has a protected roundabout, a separated bicycle facilities, and a lot of folks aren't aware of that. But there's a lot of great projects that have happened in our county and in our region recently. So we want to highlight some of those, including lane repurposing projects, because there's a lot of hesitation and unknowns that folks feel about that. So if there are success stories here in our county and in South Florida, Broward and Miami, to highlight those and get a better perspective of that. We want to create that video by June. And then E, Action E, is also a new item. This was a request by our board as well to facilitate discussion of our LRTP projects and their inclusion in local comprehensive plans. So this would be looking at taking a deeper look into local comprehensive plans and trying to align that with our LRTP. And then providing a summary report of our findings by June. And then the last goal, goal six, administer the agency. For C, we got rid of move to a new office and meeting space because we achieved that. And we added a new goal to a new action to pursue a distinguished workplace designation. So this could be a bicycle friendly business or a best places to work type designation. We're going to explore a few different designations and hopefully achieve one by next June. So that concludes our recommendations for and our board subcommittee revisions that they provided for our fiscal year 21 strategic plan.
Okay. So are there any public comments on this item at this time?
Wen can hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you.
Great. This is Kim Delaney. So if I can add a comment and in addition to offer a motion for approval.
Sure.
So I wanted to take a moment to compliment the TPA's influence in the region with respect to complete streets and the prioritization of better multimodal facilities. The TPA has, with the strategic planning the TPA has undertaken, it has redefined local and regional expectations about complete streets. And that's a message, as many of the committee members know, that has been a primary directive for the Regional Planning Council since the inception of the Strategic Regional Policy Plan back in the 70s. And the TPA has picked up the message and been able to highlight avenues to better leverage and gain far more impactful efficiencies with resurfacing projects and with assisting local governments in redefining their expectations and investment expectations in particular about how the roadways perform in a multimodal context. The other thing to mention along those lines, the TPA's leadership with respect to advancing RRR projects and identifying those complete streets opportunities ahead of time has been one of the examples that we've used as we've worked with other TPAs, TPOs, and MPOs across the country. We've been highlighting that at the national scale, and it is It has been an efficiency improvement that is that has gained a lot of traction at a national scale. The other complement to pay to the TPA with respect to the policy goal setting is broadening the expectation for complete streets, not just in the context of school proximity, but in a more general approach across the transportation system. And one of the things that we all see as we look at the headlines is that prior to COVID-19, it's as though 80% of the population of the U.S. forgot they knew how to walk and bike. So, and the number one recreational activity in the United States expanding over time has been walking for recreation. And now we actually see walking and biking across the age demographic in every scale of community. And those trends are trends that if we have better facilities, now that people have remembered again, they can walk and bike. We're hoping that's going to contribute substantially to continued economic recovery as we get through this time, because it enables social distancing to be accomplished if we have facilities that can accommodate it. One of the challenges that we've always had is the sidewalk network is only 5 feet wide, and so as a default, and so you can't distance at a 5 foot in a 5 foot dimension clearly, but 8 foot multimodal paths let you bike together, walk together, and maintain the distancing that we know we're going to need going forward. Again, compliments across the board, particularly with respect to the advocacy for complete streets, adding to the knowledge base of elected officials with the success stories that we have. So with that, happy to provide a motion for approval.
Thank you so much. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, motion by Kim, second by Natalie. Are there any discussions at this time? Yes.
Sorry, again, I don't have that raised hand button.
Yes, CJ. Okay.
I have a very specific concern on one of the recommendations as to publish the video on the roundabout portion of in the complete street project. In particular, if we have looked at the UK, not the UK, Europe experience before, and actually the crash modification factor, that database has been included in the federal government, the Clean House too. You can, you're welcome to take a look. They're finding that implementing the exclusive bike lane within a roundabout or the protected bike lane within a roundabout actually is more dangerous. The crash modification factor is actually showing much greater than the safety margin there. So I encourage you to look at those safety factor before you start promote that concept. Of course I don't maybe the experience after the implementing that protected bike lane within the roundabout here might be a success. I don't know, but let us observe for a period of time, 2 or 3 years before we start promoting it. Because of the experience we have borrowed from the UK, from the Europe country is just opposite.
Okay, thank you. I can comment on that. The protected roundabout that we designed, as referenced earlier, is on the intersection of Saratoga and Cumberland Drive in the Villages here in West Palm, just a little bit east of Military Trail. We obviously, with the design, we take into a lot of consideration of the type of crashes that we have at that intersection, fire safety access, and of course, the uses around there, which is highly recreational at that location. The corridor project is about half a mile of protected with a physical barrier, protected bike lanes, and it enters into a protected roundabout for bicyclists. We model after the Massachusetts DOT and, of course, the CROW, which you've referenced of European. We constantly have been monitoring because it's really just recently completed at the end of last year, beginning of this year. We saw that there is a 20-30% reduction in travel speed of vehicle speed during this time. And of course, we are monitoring what type of crashes or if there is any crashes going through COVID. So I serve on two committees on the NCUTCD, which is the National Committee for Uniform Traffic Control Devices, one of which is the roundabout, the bike committee and the marking committee. And there are recommendations going to next meeting here on protected roundabouts as we're seeing more and more interest of or this type of design, but ultimately I agree with you, CJ. This is from an experimental perspective, it's new. We are monitoring it. Every quarter we looked at speed and crashes that we have along the corridor. I'd love to ultimately at the beginning of next year to present on some data and some findings that we have here. But what we found is that the combination of the protected roundabout works well if you have a protected bike lanes entering into this, and then there are other recommendations coming from other members from the committee, ultimately mandating that two lane roundabouts should have protected utilized as a pedestrian going through the intersection. I don't disagree. It is very new, but I do think that it provides a safer condition than what is existing, which is a share lane condition. Are there any other discussion on this item at this time?
Yeah, this is Jim Bell. I have my hand raised.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Jim?
Yeah, just it appeared while watching the presentation that the TPA is maybe looking at potential locations for sidewalks. Near schools, I saw that they're looking for three projects. From High Ridge to Congress Avenue, there is a long stretch on the north side of Minor Road that does not contain a sidewalk. And that location is somewhat important because it's within a half mile of two schools. Imagine Chancellor Charter School and Lake Worth Christian. And also High Ridge Road itself does not have sidewalks on both sides of the streets north of Minor Road to Hypoluxo. But I think Minor Road is the much more important connector there because there is a sidewalk on the south side. There was a signalization and pedestrian improvement at Minor and Congress. And I think the sidewalk improvement would be consistent with Palm Beach County policies, which I believe when I used to work at Palm Beach County, there was a policy that said there should be sidewalks within a half mile of any schools. And this is definitely within a half mile of two schools. So that would just be a suggestion if you're looking for places for possible locations.
Thank you. We appreciate your suggestion. I know that's a county road, so we'll reach out to the county and see if we can make some improvements along that.
I heard that. We'll look into it. Thank you.
Okay, great. Are there any other discussion on this item at this time? So hearing none, I do have a motion by Kim and a second by Natalie. At this time, can we go to roll call?
Yes, and I will be unmuting all. It'll probably prompt you on your end to unmute as well. If you're calling on a phone, please make sure to unmute that as well. Will Hicks?
Yes.
Wilson Alter?
Yes.
Anna Bielowski?
Yes.
Harris Bailey. Jim Bell.
Yes.
Jamie Brown.
Yes.
Vicki Gattanis.
Yes.
Thank you. Natalie Carlin.
Yes.
Wendy.
Yes.
Brian Davis.
Yes.
Kim Delaney.
Yes.
CJ Land.
Yes.
RC, you're getting feedback. Can you say that again? Yes.
Oh, me?
CJ.
Oh, yes, yes.
Thank you. Alice Hansen.
Yes.
Aaron Hoffman.
Yes.
Meher Mansour.
Yes.
Christopher Marsh.
Yes.
Michael O'Dell.
Yes.
Richard Pereira.
Yes.
Kim Glass Castro.
Yes.
Maria Tahara.
Yes.
And that's unanimously on the chair.
Great. So we're going to move to item 3A, information item. At this time, I'd like to invite Autumn Young, DOT District Freight Coordinator, to present on this item.
Madam Chair, unfortunately, Autumn Young was not able to stay in the line. She had another urgent issue, and she's looking to reschedule with us for another meeting date.
Okay. So do we have to make a motion to defer this to another date?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Can I have a motion to defer item 3A, the Beeline Highway Connected Vehicles presentation, to another date?
I have a motion.
Motion by Mayor. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, second by Vicki. Are there any discussion on this at this time? Okay, seeing none.
I may have missed that. What's the reason for that? I don't have a problem with them moving it, but what's the reason for it?
She is not available. She has a conflict.
Okay. Thank you. No problem. Okay.
So seeing no discussion at this time, we'd like to...
Madam Chair, this is John Crane. I'm sorry.
I don't see... I'm sorry. I apologize. I actually don't see when you raise your hand.
Oh, okay.
I apologize.
I just wanted to let Mo know also. Autumn said she would be available next meeting if that works for the TPA as well. She was online, but she had to drop off, Mo, because something came up up north around the Roosevelt Bridge area. So.
No, thank you, John. No problem. Yeah.
Okay, great. So seeing no discussion, we'd like to move to roll call, Margie.
For this one, it can just be a verbal yes or no.
Okay.
Unmute all.
Okay. So all those
are prompt on your end to unmute. And if you're on your cell phone, please unmute as well.
Great. So all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Okay. All those opposed? Nay. Okay, motion carries. All right, so moving on to item 3B, the Atlantic Avenue Turnpike presentation. At this time, I'd like to invite Alexander Estrada. I apologize if I didn't pronounce that right. FDOT Project Manager, to present this item.
Thank you. My name is Alexander Estrada from FDOT District 4. So we're here to kind of present our PD&E study that we recently started on Atlantic Avenue, which goes from Turnpike to Jag Road. So there's some capacity issues right now in the corridor, as probably all of you are aware, in this area. Currently, it's a four-lane divided section. We are going to be looking at adding some capacity through lanes to expand it to a six-lane divided facility. And with me, I have our consultant that is working on this PD&E, Rui. So he'll kind of go over the presentation. This is more like an informational item on the kind of like a kickoff to the study. So that's what we're going to present to you today. Okay. Rudy, you can go ahead and go to the next slide.
Thanks, Alex. Good morning, everyone. I'm Rudy Gutmare with Scalar Consulting Group. I'm the consultant project manager. What we want to do today, so give me a second. Okay, it's moving. So just a presentation outline. We want to talk about the project, introduce this project to the TPA and everyone. What happened? I'll just wait. I think someone is doing something in the background.
I believe if you are sharing your screen, oh, there it is.
Yeah. Okay, we'll restart. So we want to talk about purpose and need, look at the characteristics and the evaluation process that we're going to go through for the project, and discuss the project schedule. Next slide, please. So why are we here? As Alex indicated, we have started the project. We want to give an update to CAC, TAC, TPA board, provide the study information, and the most important part is to receive input from you all on this project. There are several components to the PD&E study. Engineering analysis, we're going to look at the traffic, we're going to evaluate safety, conduct environmental analysis, evaluate impacts to natural, social, and physical environment. And one of the most important aspects is public involvement. To go through several public involvement, coordination, meeting with the agencies as we go through towards the schedule of this project. What you see here is a general flowchart about the any project that goes through from planning to construction. And we are currently in that PD&E phase, what you see here, a two-year time frame. And that's where we just started the project. And then once this PDN is complete, we're going to go through design and the right of acquisition and eventually construction for the project. So here's a project overview. As you can see, the limits for the project starts at the turnpike and further goes further east towards the jog road. The jog road intersection will be evaluated as a part of this project. The project is approximately 1.8 miles, and the entire project length is within the unincorporated Palm Beach County areas. Purpose is to address capacity needs for future and existing. What we are looking at, it's currently a four-lane divided facility. We're going to evaluate to meet future capacity needs, potentially widen it to six lanes. Also, there will be some safety evaluations, look at safety for the, not just for the vehicles, but the bicyclist and pedestrian, while keeping the regional goal about transportation network that needs to be evaluated as well. Some deficiencies, as we know, currently this road is in some segments are over capacity. The project is also identified in Palm Beach TPA's 2040 LRTP. So talking about safety enhancements and mobility, there are certain gaps on a sidewalk that we will evaluate. And also one of the objective or the goal is to provide multimodal facilities such as continuous sidewalks and bike lanes on both sides of the roadway. Can we go back to a slide, please? Back. There you go. Yes. What you see here are the traffic volumes, AADTs. As you can see, even for existing traffic that's shown in blue, some of the segments are currently operating at level of service F, and some are near F. So definitely there's a need for capacity improvements, and that's why we're going to evaluate widening the project from four lanes to six lanes. An important note, there is a significant truck traffic, this being the major corridor that connects Turnpike on the west as well as I-95 on the east. Next slide, please. Okay. You want to go forward. There you go. Now, here we are, just a summary of potential improvements. Of course, capacity improvements. We're going to look at safety, not just for the vehicles, but the pedestrians and bicycle movement. Look at some access management changes and drainage accommodations. Some of the considerations slash challenges on this project is the right-of-way. Some areas, the right-of-way is limited. We will have to work with the Lakewood Drainage District. They have a canal on a significant length of the project. There are some potential environmental impacts. We'll also do some noise evaluation and look at the utility impacts along the corridor. What you see here, sorry, we go back one more typical. Yes, thank you. What you see here is a 6-lane proposed typical section, which includes 11-foot lanes, a 22-foot median. We are proposing 7-foot wide buffer bike lanes and 6-foot sidewalks on both sides. So as you can see, the proposed improvements would need 126 foot of a footprint for the typical sections. Of course, at several intersections, we also evaluate the left turns, need for lengthening the left turns or right turns, as well as adding once we go through a traffic analysis process. From the alignments evaluation point of view, we are identified that southern alignment, basically wherever we need to look at the right-of-way impacts, maybe look towards the south because we have a more right-of-way available in that side. And then again, you have some businesses on the north side. And last but not the least, the best fit alignment is what we will be evaluating. What that means is trying to avoid, if we cannot avoid, then minimize the impact and then, you know, move forward with the best fit alignment for the project. While we are in the project, we started the project in February of 2020. Public involvement is a continuous process from the day we start the project until the PDNE is completed and then goes to design and construction. Our goal over the next 18 months or 2 years, we'll be meeting with several agencies. We'll be coordinating with you all. Coming here to do this presentation is just a part of our coordination. Get your input. The project website, as you can see, there is a link. The link is now active. When we send this presentation, the website was still under construction, but now it's active. If you want to go on the website and make some comments, you can go ahead and do that. Next slide, please. What you see here is a schedule, like a summary timeline. As I indicated, we started in February. Our goal is to conduct a public workshop, which is an alternative workshop that will be around spring of 2021, and then conduct a public hearing in winter of 2021. While we are going from now until the end of the project, we'll be continuously coordinating with you all, do certain presentations at key milestone events. From the funding point of view, the design for this project is currently funded in fiscal year 2022. The right-of-way is funded in 2024. For construction, it's currently unfunded, but it's a candidate project for fiscal year 2027. Here is the contact. Alex has introduced me. He's our project manager. You can contact him, or you can also contact Guillermo at the FDOT Communications Manager. With that, I'll open up for any comments or questions you may have. Thank you.
All right, thank you. If you don't mind, stop sharing the screen. And so at this time, I'm going to open up for any questions and comments from members.
I have questions.
I'm sorry, Mo, before you begin, I just want to know for the record that I don't have any public comments on this.
Oh, thank you so much. I apologize. Mo?
Thank you. The question is the limits of the project. It seems like it's a sub area of the entire project that we were expecting, which is should be from Lyons Road all the way to Jog Road. So why is the reason that you limit this PDNE to the subset of that segment, which is from the turnpike to Lyons Road to Jog Road?
Yeah, good point, Mo. So the reason this was split up is that west of the turnpike, there is no right-of-way needed in order to widen the Atlantic Avenue. So we were able to widen to the inside. So in that section, from Lyons to Turnpike, there is a reevaluation that's ongoing, which does not require a full PD&E study. However, as we go east, the right-of-way is more constrained, and we require right-of-way. And that's the, you know, most of the reason we need a full PD&E. And the actual design is from Lyons to Jog Road, but the PD&E portion is from Turnpike to Jog Road. So that it's just like, you know, we split up projects, but, you know, the ultimate design is going to be one full design from Lyons all the way to Jog Road.
Madam Chair, if I may, this is John Crane.
Yes, John.
Just a small clarification. It's not necessarily because it needs right away that we broke it up, but we did have a former PD&E study west of the turnpike that evaluated the purchase of the right away for that part, and that right away was purchased already. And so Alex was right. We only need to do a reevaluation for that piece because it was already covered under a PD&E study, and the piece to the east was not. So that needs a full PD&E study.
Wayne, a follow-up question?
Yes, Mo.
Yeah, thank you, guys. One more question. Does the PD&E include an evaluation of need for maybe some additional auxiliary lanes at the major intersections along this corridor in addition to widening from 4 to 6 lanes?
Yes, Mo. You know, we're going to, as I indicated, as we go through a traffic evaluation and do some traffic analysis, the need for adding right turn lane, extending right turn lanes, adding left turn lanes, and all the intersections, we're also conducting at some major intersection ICE evaluation to evaluate what is the best option that gives you not only a better capacity, but the safe operational characteristics improvements along the corridor.
Thank you. I have no more questions.
Sure. Are there other questions or comments at this time?
I do have that Michael Lodell has his hand raised, and I also have a member of the public that wishes to speak.
Oh, okay. So let's take the member from the comment from the public first.
Rashid, I'm going to allow you to talk. As a reminder, you have 3 minutes, and it shouldn't be a back and forth discussion. You will need to unmute on your end.
Okay. Question. I think when I saw the cross-section, 7-foot buffered bike lane and I think 5 or 6 foot sidewalk, isn't it against the DOT's own guidelines on high-speed roads that just recently came, the new guidelines, Green Book, that if you are more than 35 miles and 4 lanes, you need to have physically separated bike lanes? And so is there a something out of the box, or maybe combining the sidewalk and bike lane over there and have them physically separated, because it's going to be a very high speed road over there. Or secondly, if there are not many curb cuts and stuff like that, and especially I understand that this will eventually gonna also continue somehow to all the way to State Road 7, and that area, you know, there's hardly any, there are not going to be many curb cuts. Is there any other out of the box idea I have seen in some cities, where you have, in high speed roadways or some kind of a boulevard kind of thing that you have the bicycles and pedestrians all in the middle, completely protected? I don't know, just raising the question, but my concern was that it's not consistent with the new Green Book or whatever. You have those new standards, that recommendations that DOT has for physically separated bike lanes.
All right, thank you for your comments. Are there any other comments from the board? Okay, thank you, Michael.
Basically, I'm concerned a little bit about the, we talked a little bit about the pedestrians. If we're going to have the 6 foot wide pathways, can we not look at maybe making them 8 feet at a minimum? I think that's one of the criteria we've been looking at, is trying to widen pathways out. It would seem possible that in this section, with the number of residential areas that we have, that maybe widening that pathway out on both sides to at least 8 feet would be appropriate.
Thank you. I agree, Michael. I do think that the concern of a buffer bike lane, especially as indicated earlier, that cars will be queuing in that while making a right turn lane, which is not the best use. I think we need to make a decision of either having it separated and protected, or it would be better utilized as a, what Michael suggested, as a multi-use path. Also, I was looking at the typical section. I don't see it. I know trees is not typically part of what DOT put down, but I do think that providing shade is in amenities, or it will encourage better walking and biking conditions. So if we're going to provide trees for the median, I do think that we should be able to provide trees for the sidewalk and the path. So that's my comment. Are there any other comments from any board member at this time? I do have a comment for DOT and the consultant. I see that you guys started this project back in February. And, you know, as we're having difficulty reaching as far as, like, outreach and communications at this time during COVID, have you can you talk through a little bit of your public engagement and the participation that you typically get during this time, and if there's any other newer strategy that you're targeting?
Alex, you want me to start?
Yeah, we're working on a newsletter that we're gonna send out, and you know, within that newsletter we'll have the website, so the public could be able to comment, you know, on our website dedicated to this project. So hopefully that way we'll get, you know, more participation, as well as we're planning on having at least either virtual. We're still, I'm not sure what type of meeting we're going to have, since it's scheduled for early 2021. So it might be a combination of both virtual versus and in-person meeting, or fully virtual. So that is still undecided, but I'm thinking it's going to be probably a hybrid of both virtual and a in-person meeting of the public engagement. But right now, this is kind of the early stages. We haven't we are ready to send out this newsletter, as soon as probably next week. We're going to be sending this out. And, you know, I know there's a lot of interest from the public. Alliance of Delray, very vocal about this project. We've received a lot of comments regarding this section. They want, you know, this project to be advanced and done as quickly as possible. So there's a lot of, involvement and interest from the public that we see on this project.
All right, thank you so much. Are there any other member comments at this time?
Madam Chair, I do have that the other consultant does have his hand raised. Did you have additional comments that you need to add?
That's me. I just wanted to add, as Alex indicated, for the getting more input on the project, we are also coordinated with several HOAs and sending them the copy of the newsletter so they can put it on their websites, in addition to the Alliance of Delray Associations. So that's one of the ways that we are trying to coordinate, communicate with all the stakeholders. And as we move forward with our alternatives meeting, we're going to evaluate how much communication we are getting. So that's one of the steps we are taking to get more input from people. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you so much for your presentation. So right now we're going to move to item 3C, which is right now I'd like to invite Andrew to present this item.
Hey everyone, this is a quick presentation. Just wanted to let you know about this report that we're receiving from FDOT monthly now. It's the MPO scheduling report. So all the counties in our district are receiving this report. And what this report includes are the projects that are programmed in the adopted FDOT work program. And it provides upcoming activities for each project. And then, as I mentioned, we're going to get this monthly and we'll provide it as a backup in the packet as an informational item later on, administrative most likely. So I just want to go through sort of what you'll see in this PDF, some key phases to point out. And on the screen here, you'll see this one product as an example and all the different milestones associated with that product from the moment it gets into the program all the way to construction. So there is the product manager on there. You can see under PM, and you can really look up the product manager's information if you just Google FDOT411. All the state contacts are in that database. So if you look up their name on that website, you'll be able to get some information if you want to contact them. We also have the multimodal scoping form checklist, which happens at the beginning of this process, and this promotes early input from stakeholders to put into that checklist that is going to be used by the product managers and the design team. So then we start the design process with the data execution, and then there's the opportunity, the first opportunity for design review under initial engineering. And then the last time to really provide input into the scope of the project and the change design is nearing this time of the process, and then also during the public information workshop. So you'll see the milestones for all the products with their anticipated public information workshop, and this is that last change to really make changes to the scope. And once it's past that, it's really going into constructability, which is really looking more into materials, and then they're going to bidability, and then it's going to be let, and then the last one in the table is really the notice to proceed. So that's when they can go out there and start constructing the project. So as I mentioned, this is going to be provided monthly, and some of these dates will change over time based on how the project is progressing. But we wanted to try to keep you guys updated. This is something that District 4 is trying to provide to all different stakeholders and to the public to provide some more transparency in the process and keep people updated. And that's all I have.
Oh, great. Thank you. I guess right now we are moving to administrative items, item 4.
Sorry, I do have that Natalie has her hand raised.
Oh, I'm very sorry. Natalie?
Sure. Yeah, I just wanted to really thank everybody and the TPA staff for adding this agenda item on. I found the list really helpful, and I'm sure others will too. There's a whole lot of projects that are constantly in motion, and they're always changing based on the latest adoption of the TIP and other priorities. So I just wanted to say that this list was really helpful for me. I did take the time to go through everything, and I appreciate all the work that that you all have done, and I think it's a good idea for this list to be regularly provided to the members. So thank you.
And Madam Chair, for the record, there are no public comments on this item.
There are no public comments. Okay. All right, so if there's no other comments, we're going to administrative items. Are there any member comments at this time? Does anybody have anything they'd like to share? No? Seeing none? I have something I'd like to share. You know, right now there's a co-motion is going on right now. It was supposed to be in Miami. There's some really good discussion that I was able to participate in a couple of sessions yesterday, you know, talking about more with travel demand. And I know that's something that, you know, it's constantly on our minds right here. And with recent data out of LA, that was really interesting. It's ultimately, we know that vehicular demands are coming back, but they're not really peak hour demand. And especially during COVID, if you compare March and April, what they've seen is that there's a lot of disparity in the equity and the type of communities. Communities with high income, they're seeing very low VMTs, and lower income communities has higher VMT. With that. In addition to that, there are other some discussions with what London is doing with the reopening effort, and they're trying. Trying to reopen with purpose that it would travel. So they're actually increased their congestion pricing to discourage some of those movements. And then obviously you probably heard from SFMTA, there's a lot of transit agency out there that has been really taking this opportunity to provide dedicated transit lanes. With more recently, with the NCUTCD marking committee also passed unanimously on the recommendation on how to for striping on dedicated bus lane and what we call it red carpet, right? So that is all I have. I think it's a really interesting data that's going through this time, and I hope you know, I don't know if anybody else has anything to share. I'm very interested. I know, Mo, last time you said back in March, April, we see a 40% reduction. Then now it's at 27%. I'm very interested to know what the data is for the county.
Yeah, thank you. Actually, the latest count that we had from last week showed that we are about 21 to 22% below the peak season. But we are not now in the peak season, so you would say that we are dropping, but about 10 to 15% below what would have been if we did not have the COVID at this time. So we are still below, but not as bad as we used to be. We bottomed down at 47%, I believe. That was the first week or second week of April. But now we rebounded.
All right, great. Thank you.
Madam Chair, could I ask Mo a question?
Yeah, absolutely, John.
Mo, have you had a chance to look at the profile of the traffic throughout the day to see how the peak periods, you know, if does lunch, you know, change? Does the AM peak change and does the PM peak change? Or everything is pretty much suppressed at about that 10 to 15%?
That's a very good point. No, we have not, but we have the data and we can probably go back and look at that. That's a good notion, because it tells a lot. And I understand that there is different, you know, now routine for people, especially those who are teleworking. They probably are running errands, you know, during different times. It's not concentrated during the traditional AM, midday, and PM peak periods. It's more spread out, as Wynne was saying earlier. But we can go back and look at that. Thank you for bringing it up. But we have the data. We'll go back and look at it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, John, because I know there's a lot of studies out there that looked at telecommuting. And as a result of telecommuting, the first, 30 to 60 days, people are, you know, very confined in their space. But after that, people are just as natural. We want to move around. We travel around. And they say that even though demand is back, but the travel demand is really off peak hours, such as lunch hours, as you suggested. So I'm very interested to see what the profiles of that data looks like. Thank you again.
Yeah, if I may add, it seems like if that sticks around, that would mean virtually increasing our capacity of our roadway system, because we tend to design our roadway system in terms of capacity based on the peak hour demands. And if the peak hour demands come down and we kind of redistribute the demand throughout the day, then that virtually would mean that we have additional capacity in our roadway network that we are able to capture back now.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think that's a really great TDM strategy, and you know, we've been trying for years to implement a TDM program, and COVID itself really helped us kind of initiate that that aspect of it. So, are there any other member comments at this time? I apologize if I don't see your hands.
Okay. I don't see any other hands raised.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. So the next meeting is actually in September. We won't see each other for 2 months. And we'll provide information for the near future regarding where and how the meeting will be conducted. Thanks for your patience as we conduct this virtual meeting today. And at this time, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everybody.